Last week, conclusion of our study, there was a question that was asked, what does love got to do with it? Maybe that's not the way it was worded, but that brings us into our study of Mark chapter 12, and I hope to answer that question in just moments. Now, if you'll look at Mark chapter 12, the first few verses of what we were looking at, and Jesus began to speak to them a parable, and it's a parable of a man that planted a vineyard. He put a wall around it. He dug a pit. He put a wine press in it and built a watchtower in it. In other words, he prepared this vineyard with everything that it needed. And then he rented it out to some farmers, and then he went away on a journey. And as he did so, when the harvest came, he sent a servant to the tenants to collect from them some of the fruit of the vineyard. They seized him. They seized the servant. They beat him, and they sent him away empty-handed. So the owner sent another servant to them. They struck him on the head and treated him shamefully. So he sent another and another and another. Some they beat, some they killed. He sent many others, some that they beat and killed. He had no one left to send, and that was his son. A son whom he loved. He sent him last of all, saying, well, surely, I'm sure the word surely is in there, surely they will respect my son. But the tenants said to one another, look, here's our opportunity. Come, let us kill him, and then the inheritance will be ours. And so that when the son came, they took him out, and they killed him, and they threw him out in the vineyard. What then will the owner of the vineyard do? He will come, he will kill those tenants, and he will give the vineyard to others. Haven't you read the scripture? The stone that the builders rejected has become a capstone, and the Lord has done this. And it is a marvelous, it is marvelous in our eyes. Now, I want to look at this just a little bit second. There's one more screen. This quote here, the stone that the builders rejected is what? Psalms 118, verses 22 and 23. One last verse we want to look at, or one last thought before we look at this text. Then they looked for a way to arrest him, because they knew that Jesus, that's who he is referring to, had spoken a parable against them, but they were afraid of the crowd, so they left him and went away. So I want to look at this parable just for a second, and I think this will explain what I was wanting to talk about in love. The question is, how is God seen? Jesus portrays God as this man that owns the property. It's his. He's put a hedge around it. He has prepared it. He has done everything that needs to be done for this vineyard to be successful. How is God seen? Well, that's interesting. I think it's an interesting observation when we look at this parable and continue looking at it. How is God seen? In the parable, God is seen as the provider, as the giver. How did the tenants reflect on the owner? Well, he's a nuisance. He probably wanted me to use more fertilizer. Don't know. But they saw God as a nuisance, or the owner as a nuisance, and a hindrance. Whose livelihood, who owns those grapes? It's mine. I did the work. I, it's mine. And finally, the look at him is the patsy. Why do I say the patsy? Well, his land. But if we can just get rid of the son, the inheritance is whose? It's ours. I think there is a direct correlation to the way Jesus gave this example of the landowner and God the Father. That this is a parable that is an indictment against Israel. And as we saw in the last verse 12, they understood it that way. They understood that this was a slap in the face. That the leaders themselves were being, what? Talked against. Jesus is teaching against you people. God has sent prophets. He has given. He gave you a lamb. The land of promise. We just read about how the inheritance was to be divided up. The land of promise. And nothing was lacking. God sent His prophets. God sent His teachers. And what did they do? They abused them. Slapped them around. Some they killed. Some they put in prison. God sent His Son. And what does man do? It's mine. It's mine. Well, I look at, around and look at the social media, and what do I see? I see people, how do they see God? They see God, especially the God of the Old Testament, as the stern disciplinarian. Every time you want to do something, what does God say? No fun. No this, no that, no, 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 no. You know, I do that to the dog every once in a while. Maybe not Debs. I did it to Zeke. No. And that's the way some people view God, as being the strict disciplinarian. No, no, no. When you get into the New Testament, there's a different view of God. And for lack of a better definition, I define this as the Dr. Wilby. You know, who was Dr. Wilby? Dr. Wilby was the caring old gray-haired doctor that took care of everybody's ills and wills, right? People who don't know God want you to pray to Him when somebody that they love is injured or is sick. Now tomorrow, that same person is going to be posting, ranting and raving out of their gourd. They don't know God. The image they have of God is just being a kind, I was going to say grandfather, but no. Grandpa Dyer spoke his mind. Grandpa Jones, that's mom's dad, was a pipeline superintendent. There were a right way to do things, and there was the guy that got fired walking down the road's way of doing things. So I don't think the image of a grandfather relates at all. I think people see God as Marcus Wilby, M.D. And now, especially with the politics going on, we have the image of God as being what? A socialist. A socialist. You are not a Christian unless you, what? Love your neighbor. If you don't love your neighbor, then you're not a Christian. If you don't love your neighbor, then you know God. Well, what's love have to do with it? I think that's a good question. What does love have to do with it? What is love? A lot of these people on social media don't even know what love is. It's make me feel good now. But what about tough love? God chose Abraham. He said, go to this land which I'll show you, and I will make you a father of a great nation. I will bless you, and through your seed all nations of the earth shall be blessed. I have made you special. I love you. You are going to be my people, and I will be your God. What? Now, I'm looking around the group tonight, and I know that there's more than a couple parents. Somebody comes up to your child and accuses them, or even worse, hits your child. What are you going to do? You're going to sit there and say, I love you, you poor thing. Daryl, when the kids were small, did you brook anybody accusing them wrongfully? What's love got to do with it? What about tough love? Have you ever employed tough love in your home? I got it. It was in the form of meatloaf. Yes. Come back to that yucky thing again. Mom fixes meatloaf. It is on the kitchen table or a lunch table for Sunday. Do you know how many hours there are between lunch on Sunday and time to get ready to go to church Sunday afternoon? I know. Because I spent many a Sunday at the table. Because meatloaf. Ugh. Tough love? You ever practice tough love? I remember mom and dad, especially mom, saying, what? It's gonna hurt me more than it's gonna hurt you. Oh, but that's not love. What? It's not love. Love is that gushy feeling that we all have to be rosy and pink, and we're all going to be happy neighbors, and we're all going to be, peaceful. Right? What's love good? What does love mean? Never having to say I'm sorry? You know, I used to think that the most quoted verse was John 3:16. For God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son. And I still think that is the most quoted scripture. But now, I used to think the second most frequent scripture was, what was it? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. What I'm finding from the social media is it's not that anymore. It is, love is patient, love is kind. Love suffers no wrong. Yes. People who can't even find it in the Bible will be quoting to you 1 Corinthians chapter 13. What is love? They don't know. But they know it's in the figure somewhere. So, what's love got to do with it? How is God seen? Well, He's the owner. He created you and I. He's the one that has given us everything we need. Peter says we have all things pertaining to life and godliness. There is nothing that is lacking. But these people were trying to trap Jesus. Love sometimes is a warming of the seat of the pants. So think about that as you contemplate this passage. The one whom He loved. Here in verse 6, the landowner is sending his beloved son. In Mark chapter 1 and verse 11, at his baptism, who is Jesus referred to? My beloved son. In Mark chapter 9 and verse 7, as there was that transfiguration, what was He referred to as? This is my beloved son. Hear ye Him. That's love. What's love for the son? Knowing that all the servants have been abused, some have been killed, He still has the chance of obeying the Father. I think there's a lot in that parable. Well, I wanted to start there. I told you, same bat channel, same bat place. But I don't want to stop there. That is what love has to do with it, is what I was trying to say. But didn't have time for last week. Mark chapter 12, verses 13 through 17. Later, they sent some of the Pharisees and the Herodians to Jesus to catch Him in His words. They came to Him and said, Teacher, we know that you're a man of integrity. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are, but you teach the way of God in accordance to truth. Right? That's what they said. Solomon said a few things about people that tell you words to pat you on the back. In Proverbs chapter 5, verses 3 and 4, and again in chapter 7, verse 21 and verse 22, the wise man spoke about one who goes to the harlot and her sweet lips, saying things enticing. That's what I picture that this is what they're doing. What, you want to get on somebody's good side? You're going to try and trap them? You're going to build them up? You're going to raise them up? Look, we know that you're not a respecter of persons. We know that you don't care what people say. You're not swayed by men. You're a man of integrity. We're going to build you up. Do you think they believed that He taught, what was that, in accordance with truth? No, because they were trying to trap Him, weren't they? Is it right to pay Caesar or pay taxes to Caesar or not? Now, I'm going to throw you out one quick version of this, and then we're going to come back to this real quick. Should we pay or shouldn't we? But Jesus knew their hypocrisy. Why are you trying to trap me, He said. Bring me a denarius and let me look at it. They brought Him the coin, and He asked them, whose inscription is on this? Whose portrait is on this? Whose inscription? And they replied, Caesar's. Then Jesus said to them, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God. And they were amazed. Sounds simple, sounds straightforward, doesn't it? There is a crew of people that are teaching right now that Jesus led them to sin through this act. What do I mean? Oh, don't throw rocks at me. What was on that coin? Caesar's face? What is the commandment about a graven image? Oh, so Jesus was causing them to have a graven image. Huh? Sounds kind of sick, right? Jesus didn't cause anybody to sin. They had the coin. Having a coin in your pocket, which I don't have, is that what is referenced there in Exodus chapter 20 about having a graven image? Not at all. Not at all. But I'm just throwing this thought out to you so you'll be prepared when you hear it. I'm hearing it more and more. in reference to this text, that Jesus had that image of Caesar, and that was a graven image, and because of that, I even lost the logic that they're trying to use. Bottom line is, what was Jesus saying? You're taking the one of the most divisive discussions, taxes. Yes, I'm retired from IRS. I love taxes. No, I don't. I don't want to pay any more than anybody else has to. Are they needed? Our government says they're needed. We elected the government officials, so apparently they're needed. Because we gave them the power to make that decision. So can I withhold my taxes? No. Our government has set what we decided to authorize them to do. We have to fulfill what they've given, what they have been given that opportunity or that authority to do. What was the contest here? If Jesus would have said, no, don't pay your taxes, there would have been, what was it, Herodians? Who are the Herodians? They're the people that support Herod. They're the king's men. They would have taken advantage to use that as something to destroy Jesus. They could charge Jesus with insurrection. They would use this to try to put Jesus down. Minimize it. Messiah? No, he's just a rebel. He's just a rebel. Just like some of the other false messiahs that have come up in history. So, just a thought we want to look at. They wanted to discredit him just as they did in chapter 11, verse 18, verse 22, chapter 12, verse 12. Taxes are such a divisive issue. It divides us, even as citizens today. The inscription, the engraved image. Well, we're going to stop here tonight. Time's just about up, and I don't want to take any more time. I just want to end that there's a couple things that just really jump out at me, and this is that through this study of text, as they are testing Jesus, as they're trying to tear him down and trying to minimize him, they were afraid of public opinion. They were afraid of the people. Seems like the shoe's on the other foot now. It's the believers that have to be afraid of the public opinion. It's the believers that are having their faith tested. Well, let you wrestle with that. Any thoughts or comments? Did I answer the question of what love has to do with it? Perhaps not. Where my thought was going anyway. Any other comments or thoughts?
The love was what God had done for Israel, and that's how they treated him.
Yes, definitely. God's love has been throughout page one. Even when he commands that the city of Jericho be wiped out, it is God's love for his chosen people.